Hello and welcome in.
First Science.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Well, good morning. You are listening to Science Mixtape with me, Matilda Hay, and this week we're taking a closer look at the secret life of naked mole rats. Yes, that really is their name. Naked mole rats were first documented in the 19th century by a German naturalist, Eduard Ruppel, although they've only been known to science since the 1950s because he assumed that this weird-looking creature must be a diseased or mutated individual of another species. And I have to agree with him. If you've never seen a picture of a naked mole rat, head to our Twitter right now, at Science Mixtape, and you will see that there is a reason they've been nicknamed the saber-toothed sausage. Joining me in the studio to share his deep obsession of these creatures is Wellcome Trust Engagement Fellow and geek comedian Steve Cross. Like all good scientists, Steve started his career with a PhD in human genetics before focusing on science communication and ascending to the head of engagement at UCL, where he founded both Bright Club and Science Show Off, two fantastic science comedy events which have gone on to have lives of their own. He now tours the country presenting, producing, and training clever people to be funny. Welcome, Steve.
Hello there. This is very exciting. I love the fact that you've decided to get a comedian on for April Fool's Day.
Absolutely.
Or, as I have to say, we call it in the comedy industry, Amateur's Day. In the like a proper comedian on New Year's Day, we don't get out of bed till noon. Like all the rest of you, the amateurs, you can get all of whatever it is you're doing for free out of your system. You know, all these weird things you think are jokes. And then at noon, we'll get up and we'll start charging you for some actual proper jokes. And that's how April Fool's Day... I mean, I was looking
so
at...
So I've ruined your lion this morning.
Well, that's the point of Science Mixtape, isn't it? Is to get people who've worked hard all week and then drag them into Soho on a Saturday morning. And Soho on a Saturday morning... Listeners, if you've never been to Soho before 10 a.m. on a Saturday, I mean, if you want to see what it was like when they filmed 28 Days Later... This is the place to be. It's just weird deserted streets and things blowing around and shutters everywhere and no people and nothing open apart from the only place to get coffee, McDonald's. So I'm drinking McDonald's coffee for the first time in my life. Hello, listeners.
Now, you've always said that you're on a one-man mission to popularise the naked mole rat. Tell me, when did this obsession first arise?
Well, a few years ago, I was recording an episode of the Bright Club podcast, which, if you want to hear a very young me who's not really worked out how to be funny yet, you can go and listen to lots of old episodes on the Bright Club podcast. Please don't do what someone did. Listen to all of them and then go on a date with me, because that's super weird when you say to someone, I've listened to 60 hours of your podcast. I know everything about you. And we were recording an episode with Gail Davis, who's now a professor at Exeter. And Gail is a sociologist and historian of science and a kind of human geographer. And she studies people who study animals. So she doesn't study mice. She studies people who study mice. And one of the questions we asked her was, what's the cool new animal? You know, what's the cool new science animal? And she said, naked mole rat. And I was like, what is that? And she said, well,
it sounds like a joke name in itself, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, straight away, I thought she's toying with me. But it turns out it's real. She said it looks like a sausage with teeth. So I Googled it and I had to immediately correct her. It does not look like a sausage with teeth. I don't know. Are we allowed to use technical terms for parts of the human anatomy on Science Mixtape?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it looks like a human penis wrapped in a human scrotum with teeth. I'm going to be honest. And yeah, after that, like, how can you not like an animal that is so weird, breaks so many rules? We'll come on to all the biology and stuff later, but I was talking to an insect curator for one of the big zoos this week, and he said he considers naked mole rats to be an honorary invertebrate. He doesn't think of them as a mammal because they're so special and different and not boring like normal mammals. How can you not like that? How can you not like something that... It's just so weird. Like everyone else, you go, what's your favourite animal? And they go, lion. It's like, oh, we know everything about lions. They're boring. So, yeah, I became totally obsessed. Like, I'm not an expert, although for a while my Wikipedia page did say Steve Cross is a world-leading expert in naked mole rats.
Really?
Well, it was. I was at the Green Man Festival. Have you been to Green Man?
I have.
Everyone should go to Green Man. It's absolutely amazing. It has this lovely science area. I was backstage at Green Man getting drunk with a man who writes operas for a living. And he went, I've just altered your Wikipedia page to say you're a world-leading expert in naked mole rats. I was like, fine. Good. So if you want to go and lie on my Wikipedia page, you now know it exists, listeners.
And coming up, we will be digging into the secrets of the Naked Mole Rats' unusual societies, their love of poo, and the medical marvels of their anti-pain, cancer-resistant, age-defying bodies.
Yeah, and we're going to be busting a few myths. They're not quite as pain-resistant as everyone thinks.
Great. But for our experiment this week, it's going to be more of a masterclass, as Steve is going to share his top tips from Clever Make Funny, his project which gives scientists the tools of a stand-up comedian. And I will be his guinea pig.
Guinea pig's just a rubbish naked mole rat with fur on, let's be honest.
Their terrible cousin. But as always, it's time for our brain teaser. And this week, we've got producer Yaz behind the desk.
Hello.
Take it away, Yaz.
So this morning's brain teaser is, a milkman has two empty jugs, a 3-gallon jug and a 5-gallon jug. How can he measure exactly 1 gallon without wasting any milk? So wasting would be, you know, just chucking it away.
Spilling it.
Yes. So if you think you have an answer, you can tweet at us at Science Mixtape
or at Soho Radio. Where's the milk now? Has he got a 3-gallon empty jug and a 5-gallon empty jug?
Yes.
So where's the milk now?
It's in a...
giant measuring cylinder. Is it in a giant measuring cylinder where you can measure exactly 1 gallon? Because that's how he's doing it. From the measuring cylinder, done. Bin the 3-gallon one, bin the 5-gallon one. Just take it out of the measuring cylinder. Everyone goes home happy. Brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant.
If you one ring in. We've solved it.
All other queries will be answered.
Oh, it turns out he's got a really accurate set of scales in his back pocket, takes them out, and we need to Google the density of milk. Is it full fat milk? Is it semi-skim milk?
He doesn't have any magic equipment or anything like that.
I think it's full fat milk, and it's currently like in his cow.
Yeah.
It's ready to come out.
Yeah.
Oh, right. So he's measuring it directly out of the cow. Good. That's a good way of getting around all my tricks to ruin your brain teaser.
Right, Steve, it's your mixtape, and what is your first song and why?
So my first song, I don't even like this song. My first song is Going Underground by The Jam, because whenever I'm talking about Naked Mole Rats living underground, I get this song stuck in my head. I don't know if other people get this, where there's specific things in their life trigger a song. If I ever go through Victoria Station, I have the song Victoria by The Fall in my head for 48 hours. And it's really annoying. But yeah, I get Going Underground stuck in my head. Like everybody else who isn't a fan of The Jam, i.e. everybody else, I only know the bit that goes, going underground, na 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 na. So we're going to listen to it today to find out what the actual words are, so that next time it's stuck in my head, it's a little bit more exciting.
Some people might say my life is in a rut. What I got. People might say that I should strive for more, but I'm so happy I can see the same things happening here today. A show of strength with your boys' brigade. And I'm so happy and you're so kind. You want more money, of course I don't mind. To buy nuclear tanks, push for atomic rhymes. And the public gets what the public wants, but I want nothing. Society's got some going underground. What if the brass bands play up?
Despite their names, naked mole rats are neither moles nor rats, nor are they totally hairless. They are more closely related to porcupines and guinea pigs.
Yeah, I was right. They are close cousins of the guinea pig. Love it. Now, Steve, you said that they are more like insect mammals. I'm really intrigued by this.
Okay, I'm just going to rewind a little bit. Because we played that song to learn the words. And I'm no better on the words than I was before. The words sound like they're just... Rip, 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 rip. You were singing some other words the whole way through, Matilda. What was the other words you were singing?
I'm not sure I can repeat all of them aloud on microphone, but they were the wonderful amateur transplants, London Underground, where they complain about the wonderful tube system always being on strike with quite colourful language.
I wasn't listening too closely, but did you say that they were muffing useless at some point?
Oh, absolutely.
Right, good, good. Right, what was the real question you were asking me? We were supposed to be talking about naked mole rats. I'd like to apologise to all the naked mole rats listening for daring to change the subject from them for a few seconds there, because I know that there are numerous naked mole rats on Twitter, and there isn't one of them who's nice. So I could imagine that they're all going to be like, Steve, how dare you get off the topic of us. So what was your real... You were going to talk about naked mole rats.
You were saying how they're interesting because they're like insects.
Well, They kind of are. I mean, I should emphasize, listeners all the way through who are thinking, here's a world-leading expert on Naked Morals. I'm a world-leading obsessive. I mean, already in your introduction, you had more facts about Naked Morals than I had the time that I had to improvise a 70-minute talk about Naked Morals at Somerset House. Yeah, they are a bit like... So if you think of wasps or ants or the aliens off of Aliens... the Naked Mole Rats are like that. They're what's called eusocial, E-U-social, where EU means...
Touchy subject.
...working very, very closely together, being nice, not being horrible to each other for no reason. And so they operate, each colony operates as like one giant animal. Also, I have a theory for people who've watched Aliens very closely. You know the aliens in Aliens, when they open their mouth, another little mouth comes out with teeth on the end of it. I have a theory that if you cut that off and crack the exoskeleton off, it's just a naked mole rat inside. That's how it works.
Because their teeth are amazing. I didn't realise that their teeth live outside their mouths.
All four teeth can be moved independently. So like a naked mole rat that was trying to show you where four of its friends were without lifting its limbs off the ground could just point with four teeth individually. Like he's over there, he's over there, he's over there, he's over there. They can't really see, so that analogy doesn't follow. But theoretically, they could point with four teeth.
Yeah, they sense things with their whiskers, don't they?
Yeah. The other amazing thing about their teeth is these guys can eat through anything. There was the Pacific Science Center in Seattle one day were redoing their naked mole rat enclosure. And naked mole rat enclosures tend to be made of Perspex boxes with polycarbonate tubes running between them, and they put a block of concrete over the end of one of the tubes to stop the naked mole rats getting out. Left it overnight, naked mole rats have gone through the concrete.
Because
they bite. Well, they used to. What we're doing, listeners, is we're doing everything you need to know about the naked mole rat in a weird order, so you have to listen to the whole show to piece it together. They live underground, like fairly deep underground, in very packed soil in sub-Saharan Africa. So the soil they have to dig through isn't like nice, loose, ploughed soil. It is like rock. So what they dig through is like concrete. So they're designed for that. So concrete doesn't even slow them down.
Amazing. And so we started to say why they were like insects.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I get easily distracted. It's this lovely coffee I'm having. They live in this kind of colony, and there is one female who's in charge, who's called the Queen. And she's totally the boss. Interestingly, it's not like bees where they all just think there's a queen because of pheromones or something. Naked mole rats, it's a violence-based dominance system. So the queen is the biggest and she beats up all the other ones so they do what she wants. And we know it's violence-based because they have a dominance hierarchy in the colony. And if you're looking at a colony and you've got it in plastic tubes, there's this lovely thing where it's like a squash ladder, the dominance hierarchy. Middle class people know what I'm talking about. In that everyone knows where they are and who's above them and who's below them. And when two naked mole rats walk towards each other in a tunnel, the one who's higher up the dominance hierarchy goes over the top of the one who's underneath. And so you know this.
Taking the high road.
Yeah, and the way they decide who's where in the hierarchy is they just fight and fight and fight and fight. And yeah, the queen is just the best fighter and beats everybody else into being. I mean, the weird thing is they're usually all related.
And then do they all? So is she the only one who's allowed to breed like with bees?
She doesn't breed with bees. Let's squash that myth immediately. No, she is the only female that breeds. She will pick two or three males and they're allowed to be her like breeding partners. But that's it. Everybody else. And the other weird thing is the rest of them don't even go through puberty. So the rest of the naked mole rats are kept. The violence keeps them from going through puberty. But if you take the queen out, suddenly loads of females in the colony go through puberty and start fighting to be the new queen. So it's not even that the rest aren't allowed to mate. They can't mate. They've not physically developed to the point where they can.
That's really interesting. And you've actually seen real naked mole rats and touched only a real naked mole rat, haven't you?
Well, the thing is, the thing I discovered is that if for every gig you do, you go on and on about how brilliant naked mole rats are, eventually people who work with naked mole rats are in your gigs and they come and talk to you. So I did a gig at the Grant Museum of Zoology, which all listeners should go and visit. If you're in London, go immediately. It's free. If you're not in London, get the train down. You have to pay for the train ticket because that's your problem. But once you get to the museum, it's free. I was doing an event there called Animal Show Off and talking about how naked mole rats are better than all other animals and being annoyed that they don't have a card in any of the kind of top trumps games. And someone came up to me afterwards and said, I'm the zookeeper who looks after the naked mole rats. My immediate response was, will you marry me? Which was a bit awkward because their boyfriend was standing next to them. But we got over that and now we're friends. And now I go and visit naked mole rat colonies, not just at that zoo, but at other zoos. Because once you're in the zookeeper network, and the trick is do a couple of charity fundraiser comedy gigs for zoo people, then you're in the network and then you can go and visit naked mole rats all over the world. They're not the only animals I visit. I have fed the only sloth being hand-reared in Europe.
Wow.
Yeah, whilst drinking wine. Wine for me with one hand, feeding carrot to sloth with the other hand. And I met twin baby sloths that with Game of Thrones names, can't remember which ones, who were being raised in Sweden. And as we were going into the sloth enclosure, there was a family standing outside it who stopped the zookeeper who was taking me in and asked something very loud and angry sounding. And the only word I understood of his reply in Swedish was VIP, which I thought was quite nice. It turns out if you do enough jokes about naked mole rats, people think you're important.
And let you visit all the animals.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I haven't gone in and fed a lion because that is not a good idea.
Now, I promised listeners in our introduction that we were going to find out about the naked mole rat's love of poo.
Yes.
Can you tell me more? All I know is that you've said they love poo.
Yeah, well, okay, I'm going to tell you two things. So first of all, I want you to put yourself into the mind of a naked mole rat, right?
Okay.
You so live
blind?
Well, you might. It doesn't even matter if you are or not.
I live
you,
in the dark.
You live in total darkness. You've kind of, evolutionarily, you've given up on eyes because they cost a lot to build and you don't need them. You can't use them. You live entirely in the dark. So you, how are you going to know when you're in your colony who's your friend and who isn't? Because you've not got like an advanced language. You can't bump into people and go, oh, it's Matilda here. Don't worry, it's Matilda. You can't. So what they do is within their colony, they cut one chamber and that is the toilet. I think they're the only animals that architecturally do this, or at least the only proper animals. And you say it's hygienic. Let me tell you what they do. So they then go to the poo chamber, they do their poo and then they roll in their poo and they roll in everybody else's poo so that the whole colony smell of each other's poo, and that's how they know when they run into each other.
It's like their perfume badge of, hey, I'm your friend.
Oh, totally. It's like, oh yeah, you smell of that sweet potato that I ate 3 days ago. You must be one of my colony and my friend. So yeah, it's very weird stuff.
And do they eat it as well?
Well, okay, now it's interesting you ask that question, almost as if you were prepared. So you've got to think about naked mole rats growing up. There's baby naked mole rats. They drink milk. There's grown-up naked mole rats. They eat sweet potato and delicious tubers. But then in the middle, there's adolescent naked mole rats. And they only eat one thing. And that thing is a special kind of poo made by adult naked mole rats, which is kind of green and has a lot more nourishment in than a normal poo.
Okay.
And my favourite thing about this is that, so a lot of what you're hearing today is from the marvellous book, The Biology of the Naked Mole Rat, 1991, edited by Sherman et al. The reason I read this is there are newer books about mole rats, but they all cover the naked mole rat and the blind mole rat, which has fur, and I hate the blind mole rat because it hasn't committed. Like, I think you go all the way. You don't be nearly a naked mole rat and cop out. They're rubbish. So I refuse to read books that have both types of mole rat in. Like, it's just offensive. So the thing this book says is they can make 17 noises and every noise has a meaning. And one of the noises is, please feed me poo. And adolescent naked mole rats do it. And then the adult has to kind of bend their body in a weird way so that they can deliver poo directly into the mouth of the adolescent. And you asked for that story on a Saturday morning, Matilda Hay. It's not my problem.
A whole new meaning to
Sorry,
you.
Listeners, for anyone who is sitting down to a breakfast of sausages, black pudding and Marmite, I'm really sorry that you had to hear that.
They can't say I didn't warn them. Steve, what is your second song on your mixtape?
So the next song is Stutter by Elastica. So one of the things when you start being a comedian is that you spend ages and ages and ages worrying about and preparing all the things you don't really need. Because as a comedian, what you need is jokes, stage time and friendly people who will help you get stage time. But what you spend ages doing is thinking, what's the perfect stage entry music? So I went through...
first impressions are really important.
Exactly. But also you want something that it starts quite quietly, you know, it builds, it then has a really sudden increase in volume, which is the moment you pop through the wing. So I spent ages with all of that. And this is what I came up with. This is my favourite tune to come on stage to. We quite often play it at Science Show Off just before I go on. So everybody, what I want you to imagine as you listen to it is... just at that very first lift, that's when I come onto the stage. If you want to cheer in your house or your car, wherever you're listening to Soho Radio, then that would be amazing. And if we can hear some here in this lovely soundproof room, because there's so many people cheering at that moment as I come on, that would be lovely.
When naked mole rats pass in a tunnel, there's not normally enough room to go side by side. Instead, a strict hierarchy means the higher status rats get to climb over the lower one, who wriggles underneath.
Because now I feel terrible that I just did one of your facts before your official facts. This is, listeners, this is my official apology to Science Mixtape for not having read all the notes that I was sent and therefore accidentally spiking one of the most important parts of the show. If you are offended by this, please tweet at Steve_X, where I will reply with an official apology to you and you alone.
Apology accepted. Thank you very much, Steve. Now, moving swiftly on, it's time for your masterclass, Making Scientists Funny.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things, like, if listeners are going to take anything away from this show, one of the things that I'd like them to take away is just how to be funnier and more interesting in everyday life. Because... well, loads of people, you'd be surprised, loads of people realise that when they tell a story, no one really listens.
I'm going to let you in a secret. So I'm quite nervous about this section because I am that person. All of my friends will tell you at school, even at uni, I got that reputation for being the person who, you know, you tell a story and they're like, great story. Or you tell a joke and then you're like, oh, you probably had to be there for it to be funny.
Are you saying you don't get enough laughs in real life?
I'm saying I'm not funny. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, no one's funny. This is one of the things that I try to tell everybody is that, so if you want to take a scientific approach, this is the mixtape after all. There's a brilliant book by Robin Dunbar, anthropologist at Oxford, who is famous enough that he's been name checked on the Big Bang Theory.
He's got his own number, Dunbar's number.
Yes. I mean, I've got his phone number if you want it. Okay. And he wrote a book about why humans laugh. And humans don't laugh because something's funny. Humans laugh because they're with a group of people that they like, and those people are laughing.
It's like a kind of social lubrication, isn't it? It's like, I like you and we're friends.
Exactly. If your friends aren't laughing at your jokes and stories, they just don't like you, Matilda. It's nothing to do with your jokes and stories.
Steve!
No. Or maybe they don't like each other. That might be the other thing. Because, you know, they're not a functioning social group if they're not laughing. But if you think, you know, if you watch the funniest TV show in the world, you might, community, on your own at home, you might laugh out loud twice. Sitting here talking rubbish about naked mole rats, we're laughing loads because we're like a little social group. And that's what's good.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So, but the thing is also, like, when you are being funny with other people, there's little tricks you can use to make your stories funnier. I mean, one thing that people get so wrong is that nothing's funny unless it sounds real. And you can make your stories much more real by making them much more specific. So I often, when I'm teaching people, I always say, if you go, there's a man at my lab who screws up his experiments every day. He sounds made up. You know, when you talk about all his terrible experiments, people just think, oh, it's a made up character. I don't care. You're trying to be funny and you're failing. You've got to be way more specific. So if you say, There's a man in my pathology labs, and we're going to call him Bob because his name is Bob. Now, every morning, Bob sets his alarm for 5:47 because it's really important to Bob that he gets the very first Victoria line into work, because Bob wants to be on a tube full of builders. Bob wants to get to the lab before anyone else. Bob wants to be the person who unlocks the lab door, walks into this beautifully clean, pristine and sparkling lab, because Bob has got a long, hard day of screwing up experiments ahead of him. He's much funnier because he sounds real, and then you can talk about it. That's why comedians will never go, once upon a time, they always go, last Wednesday, on the way here, when I was doing my 2014 Edinburgh run, you got to be super, super, super specific all the time about everything. And then it makes it funnier.
And make it real.
Yeah, because so if they're not going for your stories, it's because you're filleting too much detail out of them. Like, you've got the thing you want to tell them, but usually the thing that you want to tell someone, no one cares about. And that's not you specifically, that's everyone in the world, you know? If we wanted to know about the biology of the naked mole rat, it's on Wikipedia. People could be looking at that. They're listening to your radio show because they're interested in you, and today because they're interested in me. But and that's one of the things that I try to help people with, is to get away from the idea that you should cut everything out of the story other than the bit that you want them to know, because most of the time you're fighting for attention. And one of the ways you do that is to make it real and rich and interesting, and then that sucks them in and makes it funny.
So if you're talking also about the case of sort of by drawing them in, you then sort of build up to a punchline and give it more weight than if you had just said it within 5 seconds.
Oh, yeah. That's a really important thing. If you want your friends to laugh, you've got to actually have a punchline. So you can, but you can have a story. And I see this with acts all the time, where they've got lots of little funny bits. But they're kind of, you, as you listen, you're thinking, that was funny. But you've actually got to build to something and then drop a punchline. And so, especially with your friends, if you're telling a story and you know where you want a laugh, you can build up to it and then pause, and then your friends will laugh in the gap, partly to fill the awkward gap, because they're nice friends, I assume.
Okay, so be specific and real, build up to a punchline and make it awkward.
Yeah, well, not awkward, but you've got to make it somehow emotional. Because again, really, really, unless you are a genius dry comedian, and lots of people try to cop out of being funny by saying, I'm going to be a dry comedian. It's like, they're really rare, people who can do that really well. If you're not, you've got to have a really strong opinion on everything. Because what we're really interested in and what we're really laughing at isn't that a weird thing happened in a changing room. It's what you thought about the really weird thing that happened in the changing room. So I was trying on a pair of jeans recently, and they didn't fit me because I was being optimistic about what size I am. You know, I was vanity sizing in my head. And so I tried these on. They didn't go all the way on. And then I was like, okay. So I handed them back to the person in the changing room. And then my brain went, oh no, your DNA is all over those now. What if someone comes in and buys those and then they commit a terrible crime and leave them at the scene? Because the police will find them, take the samples off them, and then they'll think you did the terrible crime because your DNA's all over them. And then another bit of my brain went...
pessimistic view.
Another bit of my brain went, well, it's possible, but it seems unlikely.
Yeah.
And then the first bit of my brain went, but can we take the risk? Because it's the risk hazard. So I kind of thought, either you've got to buy everything you try on, or take a lighter with you so that if you don't want to buy something, burn it. Or just so that there's none of your DNA on it. Because otherwise, I mean, it could happen. Anyway, but the point is, when you tell a story, people are interested in your reaction and your emotions. And that what they want you to do is open a little door in your head. And inside the door, there's a little bit where it says, hello, I, Matilda, am a bit weird. And so the listener goes, I'm also a bit weird. And now I feel better about myself. And that is relaxing me and it giving me a chance to then laugh.
And so for your project, Make Clever Funny, or Clever Make Funny, you specifically do this kind of training with people who want to talk about science, don't you?
Well, I do it much wider than that now. So I do Science Show Off is the one that everybody's heard of, where I train up people who are interested in science. It's not just professional scientists, it's also communicators and teachers and all sorts of people like that. But I've done gigs with lawyers where I make lawyers funny. Lawyers also, brilliantly, when you do a comedy training process with them, they divide into the two different types of lawyer, even down to how they write jokes. So with lawyers, you've got solicitors who do lots and lots of paperwork and get all the details right. And then barristers who are used to turning up to court 15 minutes before something is happening, speed reading the papers and then talking to a judge. And they do that with comedy. So when you get to the rehearsal the day before the gig, the solicitors all turn up with 16 bits of paper with loads of notes on. The barristers turn up and go, oh, yes. They will sound like this. Oh, yes. I've not really prepped for this. How long have I got? And you go, 9 minutes. They go, okay. And then launch into a story about doing a poo on a train or something like that. Or the other great thing about lawyers is they know exactly what they can talk about on stage and what they can't. So you get these really detailed sets full of real names and where people live. Because if it happened in open court, they're allowed to talk about it.
Would you say that there's specific skills for making kind of science or factual things funny? Or it's just the same for all comedy?
I think it's pretty similar across everything. I mean, one of the things with science comedy is often we get paralyzed by trying to get the message across. Mm. And one of the things that I try to inspire people I'm working with to do is to get away from the idea that by the end of your 9 minutes, people should know six facts about naked mole rats. I think it's much more interesting if people feel inspired to go and look up 50 facts about naked mole rats or to learn more. I think that's much more important than we're going to test you at the end. Does a female or male dominate the colony? Which tastes better, sweet potato or sweet corn? You know, that sort of thing I think is a bit pointless, because that's that way you'll only reach people who are already hungry for facts. And that's not that many people. Most people, when they're like, I'm going to go out and be entertained, aren't thinking, well, I'll have eight things that I can bring up at a really boring dinner party. But it's weird. You can't be eating Viennetta and turn to someone and say, do you know, there's two species of eusocial mammal. it's not a useful thing to have.
Fair enough. I think that's actually a really good point, not to get sidetracked by your message.
Well, and especially when you're being funny about science, it's really tempting to just point at a weird science thing. And I've been doing some of it this morning. Yeah, here's a way the naked mole rat is weird. But it's much more fun for an audience if that weird science thing relates to you. So you said earlier on, when these were found in 1824, the man with a brilliant name that you pronounce perfectly, and I can't even remember, said that he assumed that they were diseased or damaged guinea
mutants.
Pigs or hamsters.
Yeah.
So if you do what I do and you sit in front of one of the two naked mole rat colonies at London Zoo, the better lit one, it's in the bugs area, it has four quite old male naked mole rats in it, what you get is families go past and the kid goes, what's that? And then a parent will say, oh, they must be babies. And they're not babies. And it gets me very angry. So I just sit there going, they're not babies. They're not babies. The worst one is...
One-man campaign. Not babies.
Well, the worst one is two kids came over and went, oh, they're ugly. So I turned to these kids and I went, no, you're ugly. You can't judge other animals by naked mole rat beauty standards.
And that is the perfect time to go to your third song. Steve, yeah. What is it?
So this is I Don't Want to Die in the Hospital by Conor Oberst. So this is the favourite song of the technician I work with a lot, Ian Bokett. Hello, Ian. Ian's probably up writing some poetry this morning. Ian is an interesting person. And at the end of every science show off, he plays this. And I didn't know it until he started playing it. But now, you know, I talked about songs get stuck in your head. This is now the song that when you play it, my brain immediately goes, and relax, time for a pint now. You've done your 3 hours' work. So it's going to be slightly weird playing it in the middle of this. If I suddenly just like collapse or I start reflexively packing all your microphones up, that's because my brain has gone, it must be the end of a gig.
I don't wanna die in the hospital, you gotta take me back outside. I don't wanna hear all these factory sounds, looking like a girl in a sleeping gown. I don't wanna die in the hospital, you gotta take me back outside. Can you make a sound to distract the nurse before I take a ride in that long black hearse? I don't wanna die in the hospital, you gotta take me back outside. Ah, help me get my boots on, help me get my boots on, help me get my boots back on, help me get my boots on.
A colony of naked mole rats can consist of 20 to 300 individuals. The underground territory can be as large as 6 football fields.
Also, can I do an amazing follow-up on their underground territory?
Sure.
So they, if you model how they make their burrows, there's a guy called Steve Lacombe at Queen Mary's been doing this. They form fractals. They do this weird little fractal thing. And one of his findings is that the specific maths of the way, because he's a maths person, specific way these fractals form is exactly the same as bone shattering. So he's been using maps of naked mole rat colonies to predict what happens when your skull gets smashed. So you can kind of, if you're a doctor working on this, you can learn about where the likely fracture patterns and the strength is going to be by studying a naked mole rat's colony.
Oh my God, do you think that's because as they're burrowing, they're finding like weak points in the sand that's like rock or something?
No, it's to do with distribution of roots, because the place they live, there's not a lot of rain, there's not a lot of plants, so roots are very rare. So if you want to optimize looking for things, you have to dig in this specific pattern. And it turns out that this specific, well, not a pattern, but a kind of algorithm. And the same algorithm applies to
when
breaking through, sheets of bone.
That's crazy. I want to move now to what makes them so fascinating from a science point of view. And that's, as I kind of mentioned in the introduction, they're medically quite marvelous. They live for a really long time.
Yeah.
And they are cancer resistant, is that correct?
It is. I mean, one thing that anybody remembers from GCSE biology is that with mammals, roughly, the bigger you are, the longer you live. And there's a lovely line for this. Humans, we're miles off the line because we cheat by having medicine and civil engineering, both of which in biology terms, very, very much cheating. But the other animal that's miles off the line is the naked mole rat, because it's kind of halfway in size between a mouse and a rat. Uh-huh. Mouse lives about 4 years, rat lives a couple of years. Naked mole rat lives 20 to 30 years.
Oh, wow.
It is way, way, way off the scale.
It's like so, more than doubling what it should be.
It's
like
nearly,
quadrupling.
Nearly 10 times.
10 times.
And because of this, so scientists get very excited when they find stuff like this. So if you go back to like 2011, 2012, there's loads of headlines like, naked mole rat could cure aging forever.
Yeah. Key to living forever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What I always love, if you read a science headline that has could in it, it means won't. Because if it will, we'd know. That's just, always read it back. It could, no mate, that's not going to happen. So they live for ages. They don't get cancer, or at least it's very, very rarely do they get cancer.
And that's really unusual. Most mammals do get cancer if they live long enough, don't they?
If you have lots of mice. I mean, any of you who've kept hamsters or guinea pigs, they get cancer all over the place.
Yeah, our pet cancer.
Your pet cancer.
Our pet hamster got stomach cancer, yeah.
Yeah, well, naked mole rat wouldn't. Apart from recently, two naked mole rats have been found with cancer, both in lab populations.
Okay, so not in the wild.
No, because it turns out that it's hanging out with scientists that gives naked mole rats cancer. So for years, scientists tried to give naked mole rats cancer, which is not
really
the nicest thing to do, but they couldn't. No matter what they did, the naked mole rat was like, what?
Do we know why, or we just know that they are cancer resistant?
Well, they've got a few different mechanisms, and people are slowly trying to work out what they are. One really interesting one is that if you think of their skin, it's super squidgy, and
it's really wrinkly and saggy,
what it
isn't
looks
it?
Like. Yeah. So I won't say it again, because listeners are still eating their breakfasts. But and one of the really weird things about it is that if you try and culture their skin cells, these fibroblasts, normally, if you get like human fibroblasts, they grow in a really thick layer. Mm-hmm. Naked mole rat ones grow in a very thin layer and very spaced out. And when too many get together, they just stop growing.
Because they don't like to be close together.
Well, we think they're pumping out this sugar called hyaluronic acid, which
rolls off the tongue.
Makes everything super squidgy. So like the liquid that they live in gets really thick and gelatinous with it. But it also, it's the cells use it so that they don't grow too big. So in any other animal, you know, cancer is cell growth going out of control.
Yeah.
Naked mole rats have this extra system that shuts down cell growth when they get too dense. And we think that's one of the mechanisms that means that they're not getting cancer. But there's probably loads more, because their biology is super weird. They've jettisoned loads of things that they should have. They can't keep their body temperature at the same level, because the ground they live in is always the same level.
You are, yes, absolutely stealing another fact that's going to be coming up later.
This is a difficult thing, right? I'll get off the facts. So, yeah, they've dumped vision. They've basically dumped hearing. They've dumped fur. They've dumped thermoregulation. And, yeah, when you start sequencing their genome, they've got loads of really weird, unique versions and just loads of genes that are crippled or turned off because they don't use any of that stuff.
Because they just live in this underground terrain. And you said as well at the top of the show that people have claimed they don't feel any pain. And that's actually a myth.
Yeah, well, because the test for pain on animals used to be that you put a bit of acid or a bit of very strong chili sauce on the animal and see what it does. And when you do that to a naked mole rat, they just like, they don't even look at you. They just ignore
you.
They
just don't notice
it. They're like, why is my bum wet? Because they can't feel acid-based pain because they live underground. There's very little oxygen, so it's very high carbon dioxide levels. Their blood gets very, very acid.
Oh, right.
To levels that would kill a human, and they don't feel pain from that. They could, but if you do, there's another test you can do with animals to see if they feel pain, where you get a little bit of metal, and you put it on their hand and push down, and then you see whether the animal pulls its hand away or not. And they do that just as quickly as mice. So if they're fighting or something like that, they're still
feeling pain.
Okay, so
they respond to like pressure pain, but not chemical pain.
Yeah, they just can't feel acid pain.
Does it burn their cells though?
Less than everything else. Because you can imagine, this is how they live all the time. They've just evolved to deal with it. And they've got rid of anything for living any other way. Which is what I love.
They really are like aliens.
Well, I just think we could learn a lot. You know, humans, we've made our life very complicated. Even in this recording studio, we've got extra microphones we're not using. All sorts of things. Naked mole rat. Simplify. Don't need to see. Get rid of your eyes. Don't need fur. Get rid of it. And that's one of the things I love about them. Like, you can meditate on the naked mole rat and what you can learn.
Pure simplicity. What is song number four?
Well, so song number four, this is really me trying to lead listeners into a journey around comedy. Because one of the things when you write jokes for a living is that you think, I'm bored of writing jokes for a living. And you start to try to make it art, which means you start to just mess around like crazy. And pretty much everything I know about how to be an artist, I learned from the band The Fall. I didn't want to play The Fall on the show because I think that might be a step too far for your listeners, who I assume are quite cool. So we're going to play Glitter Freeze by Gorillaz, which features a guest appearance from the lead singer of The Fall, Marky Smith. I strongly recommend you all go onto YouTube and find the Glastonbury performance of Glitter Freeze with Marky Smith, just to get an idea of how Matilda is feeling having let a comedian onto her show with all the havoc that is released when you do such a thing, when you see Marky Smith wandering around fiddling with guitarists' amps. And the thing I want you to notice most of all when you watch that video is just Damon Albarn's facial expression the whole way through Marky Smith trashing his band. So yeah, this is Glitter Freeze by Gorillaz.
It was the Glitter Freeze. Dr. M, listen, you wouldn't credit, I believe you.
Naked mole rats are the only cold-blooded mammals. They regulate their temperature by moving to the shallower tunnels that get warmed by the sun or huddling together for warmth.
News just in. Three rivers are now legally people.
Paralyzed man moves arm using power of thought.
And it turns out most of Mars's air has been stolen by space.
A spinach leaf is transformed into beating heart tissue.
Pause before you bend. 25-second delay removes the craving for chocolate.
Really? How?
Yes. Okay, so what happened was they've done an experiment with a vending machine in the States. And what happened was when you selected an unhealthy snack, like like a chocolate bar, you would have an enforced 25-second delay. And during that 25-second delay, you had the choice to switch and get a healthy snack immediately.
So it's basically, if you're made to think about your bad decisions, you will change them.
People would just... The delay prompted like an increase in the purchase of healthy snacks, and it was just people, when they were made to wait, just didn't really want
to. I wonder if we're going to start seeing vending machines that like we select and they're like, are you sure? What about this option?
But that's the thing, because since the studies come out, that loads of these health bodies have said this should be how vending machines work, because you didn't have to, if you initially chose a healthy snack, if you initially chose a banana, you wouldn't have to wait at all.
Yeah.
Where, right, I've got a number of questions. Who's what strange people is this study done on? Because if I press a button for something delicious and you pause, I'm hitting the machine. I'm not being like, oh, maybe I should have an apple. Also, where are these vending machines that contain delicious chocolate and crisps, but also apples?
Yeah, I don't, you don't see many apple vending machines.
The little spiral thing that you sit the delicious chocolate and crisps in, you can't get an apple in there. Like, you'd have to have the tiniest banana.
It would be bruised when it came out
as well. A single fig. I'm not buying a single fig. If I'm hungry for snacks, I'm hungry for snacks. And yeah, that study's not done on real people. Real people are like, just give me chocolate now.
Well, speaking of real people, these rivers are now not actual people, but legally people, which I think is so cool. What? It basically is a way for people to give them legal rights that are then enforced. So in India, two sacred rivers, the Ganga and the Yamuna, have been given legal rights in response to urgent need to reduce their pollution. And in New Zealand, the river they've made a legal person is one that's really important to the Maori people. So it's to recognise that special relationship. And I just think this is such cool precedent to set. Like, obviously, overnight, it doesn't change things straight away, but it's a really good kind of first step onto taking environmental situations more seriously and ensure having ways to enforce that they're looked after properly.
What else should we make into people? Trees. I can think of some trees that should be people.
Trees would be awesome people.
So I grew up in Nottinghamshire, and like the major oak in Sherwood Forest is such a big part of our mythos, despite the fact it's probably not the one that Robin Hood hid in because of timings. But it would be lovely to just make that a person. And then the good thing is it's old enough that it would be able to claim a pension. And then we've got looking after the major oak paid for, because it can back claim for 800 years of state pension, and that would pay for it. So that's an easy one.
Perfect.
Do you think we could make Soho a person, or is Soho too incoherent?
No, corporations are already able to be legally people, and then they can hold property and, yeah.
So it's only, can these rivers hold property now?
They
are
could.
They building up a buy-to-let portfolio in Maidstone?
I don't know. They've got these guardians to represent them, and I don't know what their plans are, but yeah, probably like the fields around them get to be their property.
So wait, when you say guardian, do these people legally have power of attorney to do the things for the river?
Yeah.
That is amazing. That is so, so good. So listeners, if you've got anything you'd like to make into a person, then why not tweet us at Science Mixtape and say, I would, especially if you've got a person who you don't think is enough of a person, maybe they're always very predictable and boring, and you want to make them into a proper person, we can do that through the magic of science news.
Steve, tell me about your Mars story.
Well, I was very, so this is from the BBC website, and it's just a worrying thing if, like me, you spend your life thinking of terrible things that could happen to you and all of your friends. So a new analysis conducted by the Maven satellite has made it clear that Mars used to have a perfectly good atmosphere, like as thick as Earth's atmosphere, quite a lot more carbon dioxide, but that's fine because you can use that to make plants. And apparently the bulk of that, maybe 90%, has been lost to space. Because I didn't know that space was going around stealing atmospheres from places, because that's quite worrying for the Earth. You know, we wake up, like you wake up in the morning and you're a bit breathless. And you think, oh, is it my asthma acting up? But no, sneaky space has come and nicked your atmosphere overnight. It just sounds terribly worrying. And I'm trying to read more of the story for the bit at the end where they say, oh, it's fine, it will never happen to the Earth. But
yeah,
it never says
why haven't we lost our atmosphere when Mars has?
Listen, I'm desperately looking for that part in the story. I think, no, what's going to have to happen, listeners, is every day I want each of you to just reach up and grab a bit of atmosphere and hold
it in a bottle.
Together. Well, just with our hands, together we'll hold the atmosphere and we won't let it be sucked into space. And also, when we send people to space, we need to send people who can convince space that it doesn't want our atmosphere. So we'll send people up into space who fart a lot, so that when space steals the air out of their spaceships, space goes, oh, Earth air is horrible, I don't want it. And then space won't steal our air. Problem solved, done, right. That news story is not a problem anymore.
Tell me about this incredible man moving his arm with the power of thought.
Yes, so
I can move my arm with the power of thought right now. I want to put my arm near a Yaz, put it nearer me.
Crash your bike into a truck and become completely paralysed from the waist down?
No.
Oh, from the neck down, sorry. Yeah, so that wouldn't be that amazing.
I'm not belittling his achievement. I'm just belittling the way that the headline's written.
So he's It's taken him 8 years to get to this point from after he had some electrical implants put in the motor cortex of his brain and then sensors put in his forearm. So which means the muscles of his arm can basically just move when he thinks to move, as if he had he was never paralyzed.
Amazing.
It's taken 8 years, but now he is able to drink and feed himself without anyone helping him, which is pretty amazing. Because I think probably it's everyone's worst nightmare, isn't it? And now it's
the worst nightmare is the atmosphere being stolen.
Okay.
It's the second worst nightmare. Second
or you could combine nightmare. Them, be trapped in your body while the atmosphere is being stolen and not be able to do anything about
can
it.
Can we get him, if he can move his arm again, he's got to join the group, reaching up and grabbing and holding onto the atmosphere.
Yeah.
We are running out of time here on Soho Radio. So, Yaz, could you please first say if anyone has had any good guesses for the brain teaser and then reveal the answer?
Yes, actually, we have had a good guess from Bradley Higgins, who's got it right. A few other people actually have tweeted and got it right. Maybe this one's a little bit too easy. Maybe I should be a bit more sneaky next time. So the answer is, if you fill the 3-gallon jug and then empty the contents of that into the 5-gallon jug and then fill the 3-gallon jug again and then continue to fill the 5-gallon jug until it's full, and then you will have 1 gallon left in the 3-gallon jug.
And then pasteurize the milk.
That is very important.
Yeah.
Very clever. Steve, thank you so much for joining us today.
That's all right. Can I do a quick advert?
I was about to say, is there anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, listeners, if you've enjoyed the sound of my voice and want to hear it a lot more with swearing, I have a podcast called Masterpiece Bookshelf, where me and my friend Gregory review the great literary works of the world, meaning I bully him for 45 minutes. And if you go to scienceshowoff.org, you can find lots of ways to come and see me live.
And Science Show Off is a fantastic night. I definitely recommend everyone goes.
Oh, it's so kind.
What is your final song and why?
My final song is going to be Brand New Your Retro by Tricky, which is a song that I play to myself every now and then when I get bored of doing the same material over and over. And I think, come on, Steve, what is the point of all this comedy thing? And I think the point is to always push the edge. The point is to wake up every morning with a new idea and a new way of doing things. And the point is to experiment and muck about. And yeah, I use this song to remind me of what I'm supposed to be doing.
For more Science Mixtape, you can find our shows on Audioboom, iTunes, or any other podcast provider. Or join us live every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Soho Radio, recently voted the best online radio station in the world.